You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Tour de France, brought to you by iWoka, flexible loans built for small businesses. iWoka.co.uk. Today, we're in Laval.
Hello, my name is Richard Moore. I am joined by Francois Thomaso.
Hello.
And brought to you by Gravity, Lionel Burney.
Oh, we're going there already, are we? We're starting off already.
It's a shame it was such an exciting stage today, because I'd like to spend the first 10 minutes or so talking about your bike ride today, Lionel.
Unbelievable. I rode from our hotel
impressive.
To the finish in Mio.
Impressive,
it was
yeah.
It was a lovely, I mean, I was flying.
Lovely, lovely, round there. Oh, hello.
I was flying, Richard. Average nearly
podcast
35 kilometres an hour.
Well, Lionel, yeah, you drove from the hotel to the start.
It was a long ride, like about 30 Ks maybe.
And that, and
45 Ks. 45 Ks.
Francois and I were driving to the start behind you. And as we were driving, we both said, about the same time, I can see why Lionel fancied this one. You like your downhill cycling, don't you?
Well, descendeur
de charme.
I mean, it wasn't all downhill. It was net downhill. But as you know, in this region, it's up and down, but gradually I was going down, descending. And then there was a nasty little kick up to
the
finish.
To be honest,
I'm sure your momentum carried you up it, no?
Well,
I was worried you wouldn't be able to stop in Mio.
I could have just carried
on.
Straight on to the finish. I probably could have got in that first group today.
My impression was that the highest climb your bike had to do today was going back on the rack.
I mean, you a brake pad sponsor for next year.
Goodness me. The joke's on you, because tonight I am the proud holder of the pudding-coloured jersey as best descender in the Tour.
Yeah. Oh, it's impressive. Very impressive.
Well, we'll see how impressive
your
it is on our rest day ride.
Flying around.
They were going round so quickly.
Like the clappers.
Yeah.
Bring a bigger chain ring next year. Can you give us a tale of the adapt?
This is absolutely remarkable. I mean, some would call this bullying. I mean, I wouldn't personally, but some might.
Well, by the way, where are we?
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in Lavaur. Are we still in? Well, we're not in the Tarn now, are we? Or are we?
I think we're still in the Tarn, yeah.
Right, okay, yeah. I mean, the countryside's been absolutely stunning all day, hasn't it? And do you want the tale of the etap? Not my etap, the actual etap, stage 7. There was a sprint in Lavaur, as I kind of said there would be, but I did hint that it was more like a transitional stage than a regular opening week sprint stage, and it proved to be the case, because it was anything but formulaic today.
2,000 metres of climbing, wasn't
absolutely,
there?
Yeah.
Not it for you, for the right.
I had 2,000 metres of descending, Richard.
Probably more.
Oh, unbelievable. Unbelievable. We'll have a moratorium on any mentions of my bike riding from here. But the stage itself had everything. There was a really aggressive start by Bora Hansgrohe, and their aim was to put all the sprinters in trouble on the first climb, and they did that to great effect. They were all at the front, and they managed to drop Sam Bennett, the green jersey, Caleb Ewan, and pretty much all the other sprinters. Sagan may have been pipped at the intermediate sprint by Matteo Trentin. Oh, you're stifling laughter, Richard. The serious business of the tale of the attack.
Sorry. Carry on.
Totally overshadowed by my descending competition. I'll look away. Sagan may have been pipped at the intermediate sprint by Matteo Trentin, but it was enough to put him in the virtual green jersey, and at some point the Bennett group eventually gave up the fight. Their day was done. There was more drama to come in the final hour or so, but there was even time for a solo break by Thomas de Gendt of Lotto Soudal. It was actually the 28th time he's been off the front in a break at the Tour de France in his career. There'd been the prospect of crosswinds for the last hour or so of racing, and the finale was really reminiscent of last year's finish in Albi, not far from here, won by Wout van Aert. Spoiler alert. If you remember that day, Thibaut Pinot and Rigoberto Urán were the big losers. It was the last day before the rest day, and it felt like...
And Mikel Landa,
of course, yes. And it felt like the whole Tour had got to the first rest day with all of the GC contenders intact, and then suddenly the complexion of the race was changed. It wasn't quite as dramatic today, I don't think, but there were losers again, chiefly Tadej Pogacar, who loses the white jersey to Bernal. Mikel Landa, the unfortunate Mikel Landa.
Poor Mikel Landa.
He got tangled up with his teammate Matej Mohoric and was in the chasing group. Esteban Chavez, apparently not going for GC, but still very well placed this morning. And the Trek duo, Bauke Mollema and Richie Porte, were all in a group that lost 1:21, as was Richard Carapaz of Ineos Grenadiers. Carapaz wasn't actually caught out in the crosswinds, but he had a very badly timed puncture. And he was left on his own because Ineos Grenadiers really were the team that kicked off. They marched to the front, Richard. And they put the pace, they made the pace very high. And when Carapaz was dropped, he was left on his own. And it wasn't until his teammate Jonathan Castrovieco belatedly dropped back that he had any help at all. But it was obvious he was never going to make it back to the front, and he slipped into the second group. And the similarities with that day in Albi last year don't end there, because Wout van Aert won the sprint. I mean, it was, I thought, a formality coming into the last couple of kilometres that van Aert would win the sprint, and he did. The drama didn't end there, because Peter Sagan veered quite alarmingly across the road, seemed to impede Julian Alaphilippe, who then in turn waved his arm at Jasper Stuyven. That was the result of Sagan's chain dropping, he said afterwards. Nevertheless, he is back in the green jersey. So the top three today, Van Aert, Edvald Bosenhagen of NTT Pro Cycling, and Brian Cockart of B&B Hotels. The overall has changed a little bit because Pogacar has dropped down, but it's still Yates in yellow ahead of Roglic. Guillaume Martin now up to third place, just 9 seconds behind. And then the rest of the top ten, I mean, you wouldn't be surprised if it was these guys were in the top ten in Paris, because it's Bernal, Dumoulin, Quintana, Bardet, Lopez, Pinot, Uran. And tomorrow we hit the Pyrenees.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast, brought to you by iWalker. Flexible loans built for small businesses. Join 50,000 customers taking on life's twists and turns, and scaling you right with iWalker. If you run a small business, find out more at iwalker.co.uk. iwoca.co.uk.
Thank you very much indeed to our title sponsor, iWalker, who have been backing the Cycling Podcast since March in what's been a turbulent year for them and for everybody, but also for the small businesses that they support. And they are accredited by the British Business Bank to offer coronavirus business interruption loans. So you can go to iwoca.co.uk to find out about them, but also their normal loans are back on stream as well. So if you run a small business and you'd be interested in finding out what iWalker can maybe do for you, go to iwoca.co.uk. Well, it was a thrilling stage today, wasn't it? You know, one of these, we had a stage like this at the Vuelta last year where the action, it's on from the start. And Bora Hansgrohe, you know, there was a lot of climbing in the first part of the stage. They didn't have to go at it from the gun, but they more or less did. As soon as they hit the climb, they went to the front, drilled it, lost Sam Bennett, Caleb Ewan, Alexander Kristoff, most of the sprinters who might, well, obviously there's a green jersey, but there was also a stage went up for grabs. And there was an intermediate sprint as well. And we wondered whether Bora Hansgrohe were just setting up Sagan for that intermediate sprint and then their work was done, or whether they would continue it to the finish, because there was an awful long way to go. But they had to kind of carry on, because the lead by then over Sam Bennett and the others was pretty significant.
Remember, they did the same in 2013, I think, on one of the stages. And actually, Sagan went to win the stage that year. So maybe a sign.
Talking about the stage that came out of Andorra.
I think it might be. I remember.
They climbed,
you know,
out of Andorra.
They did the same move in 2013 for
Sagan's team.
Yeah. I think it was Cannondale at the time, I think. And Sagan went on to win the stage, which seems in a way that, you know, maybe Sagan is not as strong as he used to be, or that the opposition is now, and namely Wout van Aert is probably better than
the new
used
Peter
to
Sagan.
Be.
What's fascinating is that, you know, it's not so long ago that Peter Sagan joined Bora Hansgrohe, and people worried that that team might not be strong enough for him to support his ambitions, and also that that team would be all about one rider. That team has become far more than just one rider, and actually today they performed better than he did. You know, and he, okay, very harsh reading of what happened, but he will not feel great tonight, I don't think. Okay, he had some bad luck in the finish, but he wasn't very well positioned anyway, and it didn't look as if he was going to win. And with his team, he didn't even win the intermediate sprint. You know, Matteo Trentin beat him there. And all of a sudden, Peter Sagan is not the machine that he was. He's still super consistent. He's still one of the best riders in the world. But something is lacking. Something's missing with Peter Sagan. And when that happens, you know, the efforts that his team made today to try and set things up for him, it will become harder to justify that sort of effort.
Yeah, I mean, in a stage with for punchers, as we say, you know, in French, when you have a little hill in the finale, well, there are better riders than him today, nowadays, including Julian Alaphilippe or even Wood van. Well, you could almost name Wood van Aert in any kind of setting, even in small mountains these days. Well, in sprints, obviously, there are better riders than Sagan. So, well, I think that, you know, probably his only objective in this Tour de France, as we saw, is the green jersey. And probably Bora Hansgrohe really went for the green jersey. We have no idea what about the shape of their leaders, Max Schachmann and, you know, Emil Buchmann.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they crashed, they came into
the
Tour.
Both came in injured. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, they both came into the Tour injured. So maybe it's a sign to see Bora Hansgrohe attack the way they did before the Pyrenees is a sign that maybe they're not too confident on their, you know, nominal leaders to perform well tomorrow. I don't know.
I think Emmanuel Buchmann is fine, but the others are out of the picture, aren't they? Schachmann, Lennard Kamner, and Gregor Mühlberger, you know, are well down. They're down to one GC hope now. And, I mean, Peter Sagan, he clearly not, you know, not the force that he was, but they raced incredibly aggressively and they completely changed the complexion of the day. I mean, they made it hard for everyone. They put the sprinters, you know, Sam Bennett and co were in a group that was chasing very hard for 90 minutes, close to 2 hours before they really gave up the ghost, wasn't it? It was a long
Caleb
chase.
Ewan was even way down.
Absolutely. So they had a hard day, and the fact that Sagan didn't win the stage, disappointing, but he is back in the green jersey. And as we know, the green jersey competition isn't necessarily about being the fastest sprinter or the man who wins the most stages. It's about being the most consistent all the way around France and picking up points when you can. And you have to say, Sagan is going to take points. He has the opportunity to take points on many more occasions than Sam Bennett or Caleb Ewan.
If, you know, he was going for it, it's Wood van Aert again, you know, who could be, I mean, you know, two stage wins. If he decides to, he won't be, you know, totally dropped in the mountains, but I mean, his role will obviously be different. But a quick stat I found. Do you know the last time a Belgian won two stages in the Tour de France?
Oh.
Do you mean the same Belgian?
The same Belgian winning two stages in the Tour de France.
Eddie Merckx.
No. Well, it's always Eddie Merckx, but in this case, it's not.
Eric van der Aarden.
It's quite a long time ago that a Belgian won two stages in the Tour de France. It was
Frank Host.
No, it was 2007, Boonen.
Oh, Tom Boonen.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah,
well, which is already
that's a long time ago.
Not by Eddie Merckx, is it?
That feels like
yesterday. I just automatically said Eddie Merckx.
But once again, which sets the standard of Wout van Aert in Belgium these days, you know? No Belgian had done it since Tom Boonen.
He has accidentally won two stages, and he may accidentally win the green jersey as well. Because, I absolutely 100% believe him when he says that he's here purely in a team role to support his team's GC ambitions. But on two occasions, he's found himself in positions to win the stage, and he's done it. And he just... We were watching the finish together, Lionel, and as it came into the final kilometres, we both said, it's got to be Wout van Aert.
Of course.
If he decides to try and win this, he will win it, because he is so much better than everybody else at the moment.
But the value he has to Team Jumbo-Visma in the mountains is significant. I mean, depending on how good he feels, he could ride really late in some of these stages and give Robert Hessink, Sepp Kuss, you know, George Bennett, who's still struggling, I think, after his crash on the opening weekend. You know, really give them some easy days and save them for the more critical days that come at the end of the second week and in the third week. I mean, he's such an asset. But if you look at what he's done since the racing resumed after lockdown, first at Strada Bianca, third at Milano Torino, first at Milan San Remo, a stage win in the Dauphiné, the Belgian time trial championships, and now two stage wins in the Tour de France. I mean, it bears repeating because it's an extraordinary run of form by a rider who can do absolutely everything. I mean, look at the difference in not just terrain, but the type of physical effort required to win a time trial. Okay, only the Belgian nationals, only. But Milan San Remo, the longest one-day race on the calendar, and then two Tour de France stages. It's you know, he's such an asset to Jumbo-Visma, and definitely the man of the day. Okay, you know, the opposition in the sprint was Edvald Boasenhagen and Brian Cockart in the end, but good sprinters, but sprinters. Not, you know, but if two or three of the A-list sprinters have been in there, you would still imagine Van Aert would be in the mix.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast Team Car, the back of the pack, please.
Our Tour de France coverage is sponsored by the next generation Watt bike, Atom. And yesterday we heard from Watt biker Chris Scott, who's been recovering from a pretty bad accident by getting back into cycling on the Atom. Now his recovery is making good progress. Let's hear about some of his training goals and future objectives.
The mental freedom of getting back on the bike. And when I got back on the bike for the first time, it was just that this huge pressure had been relieved. It's the highlight of my day, really, if I'm honest. You know, not wanting to override the children and the family. Aside from that, it's the highlight of my day. I should throw that in there very quickly. I've got some goals set for the next few years based off this. You know, I've pledged to myself that I'm going to go and do a full Ironman. I want to get running again. But it will all be supported by various bits of training, and key to that it is definitely the Watt bike. I was incredibly lucky to survive. The number of medical people and the police afterwards who have said that by all rights, I shouldn't have survived. But thankfully, again, the consultant said to me that one of the big factors in me surviving that crash was my level of fitness. So, you know, if that's not an inspiration to try and get back to that level of fitness, or, you know, anyone that listens to this, get a good level of fitness, because it can save your life in more ways than one. Yeah, so that's really a very large part of how I survived. So thanks to the Watt Bike again for that.
If you'd like to find out more about the Watt Bike Atom, go to wattbike.com. That's wattbike.com. You can buy a Watt Bike Atom from £90 per month.
Well, winners and losers today, as always, in the crosswinds. We should pay tribute. We've paid tribute already, I think, to Bora Hansgrohe. Then it was really the Ineos Grenadiers, wasn't it? And Dylan van Baarle did a big shift on the front, and then Michał Kwiatkowski. They didn't have a lot of numbers up there, really, but he in particular made a big difference. And I think it was when Kwiatkowski went to the front that Pogacar was distanced. Before that, Mikel Landa, poor old Mikel Landa, had, as you said, Lionel, got tangled up in Matej Mohoric's bike. And second year in a row that's happened to him. Well, he was very unlucky last year. He crashed, didn't he, on the crosswind stage, and lost a lot of time through absolutely no fault of his own. Today again, no fault of his own, and he loses time. It's desperate.
Must be the unluckiest GC rider going. Yeah. I mean, this happens to him so often. Do you remember, even in the Giro a few years ago, he got tangled up and on the stage to Blockhouse, and that
yes,
was his chance.
That's
gone
right.
There.
Again, you know, that was not his fault at all.
Yeah.
It was Wilco Kelderman hit
that's
a
right.
police motorbike, didn't he?
That's right.
And it was just a tangent, but I listened recently to Ian Boswell's look back on the 2010 Tour de l'Avenir, which was a real kind of golden generation of talent. Nairo Quintana won the race, Andrew Talansky was second, and Mikel Landa got a few mentions as one of the really strong young riders in that race. And, you know, he's never really fulfilled that in terms of results in Grand Tours. You think that he's a guy with, you know, podium potential at the Tour de France, and just never quite got there. And it's now looking He's now on the back foot this year once again with a team behind him. But there were winners today as well, and a couple of them were the losers last year, Thibaut Pinot and Rigoberto Urán.
Absolutely. About Landa, you know, they talk about the luck of the winners. I mean, the winners, the real GC contenders never seem to have problems like you know, guys who end up winning the Tour stay out of trouble most of the time. So, and the Landas or Richie Porte, as we say again, look kind of doomed to have been trouble. I don't know.
Say Thibaut Pinot.
Well, yeah. So far Thibaut Pinot, but this time Thibaut Pinot, as you said, and Rigoberto Urán, who actually got trapped behind an echelon last year near Albi, which was in the same region, this time managed to overturn, the situation last year, and it must be a huge morale booster for both teams. A quick question I ask myself: why were our favored Grenadiers taking the reins at this stage of the Tour? What was their aim? Winning the stage, take back the reins and say, look, there's not only you, Jumbo Visma. We've been kind of ruled out, in the first week of the Tour. We're still here and in command. What was the objective? What did they gain from that?
Well, they put three or four people out of the GC picture and simplified it a little bit. I mean,
but their Jumbo-Visma enemies were there in the echelon as well and didn't do any work, and they won the stage. So tactically, it seemed to me more a reaction of pride than a real tactical move as such, it's great. I mean, it's valuable. I mean, you need to boost your confidence and prove you're there, which was probably the case also for Education First and Groupama FDJ. They had no real aim. There was no reward to be looking for.
But the thing is, when the crosswinds start blowing and you think you might be able to do some damage, you don't know who's going to get caught out. You don't know what might happen. You don't know if suddenly there'll be six riders away and it will be Bernal, Carapaz, Kwiatkowski, and suddenly Van Aert and Roglic and Dumoulin are chasing like stink.
But once again, at the end of the day, the winners today were Jumbo-Visma again. They won the stage.
Yeah, well,
and Carapaz was one of the losers. And again,
yeah, absolutely,
very unfortunate because he hadn't looked at his best, but he was still there. It was seconds, and now he's lost a significant chunk of time. But Bernal is looking ominously good. I mean, he looks exactly the same as last year, and most importantly, he's not had any bad luck. He's not had any issues so far at all, and just quietly he's ridden to fourth overall.
Yeah, we should be aware of the riders we haven't been talking
well,
about at
that's
all.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Egan Bernal, Rigoberto Urán, even Romain Bardet. I mean, all these guys, Thibaut Pinot, very little.
Quintana.
I mean, all these guys have just been staying out of trouble, and well, the big showdown is starting tomorrow in the Pyrenees, but we'll get back to it.
In a funny way, though, remember that last day before the rest day? It was an additional day, wasn't it? Because the rest day was on the Tuesday, so they had 10 whole stages before the rest day, and it felt like, the whole GC has got through this first phase of the race, and we're in for an absolute barnstormer. And then Urán, but to a greater extent, Pinot suffered. I mean, Pinot got away lightly with the losses compared to Urán on that day, I think, but the fact that Pinot had lost any time whatsoever, he's so fragile sometimes. It was a kind of a blow to those of us who wanted to see a really, really open race. In a funny way, today gives me a bit of confidence because Pogacar now can do what he likes in a way. I mean, he doesn't have to worry about riding in any way defensively. He can make up a bit of time. He could go for a stage win. And Landa as well. Landa could probably be more of a threat to people in this race, having lost a little bit of time, than being in that group, that bubble of riders trying to not lose. He's now in a position where he might want to try and make some gains, and he could really sort of set the cat among the pigeons, and he's someone to watch. So in a funny way, I think it's quite good for the race, the riders that have lost out today.
Landa, we didn't really sort of notice this so much at the time, but he crashed quite heavily on the first day, and I spoke to Rod Ellingworth the other day, who said he was hurting from that. There's been more attention on Wout Poels, who suffered bad injuries in that crash. But you know, Landa's coming back from that as well, and hopefully we'll get to full fitness by the time we hit the mountains, which is tomorrow.
But what was interesting was seeing Groupama FDJ really like doing the opposite to what happened to them last year. When the split happened, suddenly they had riders on the front contributing and trying to capitalize on what Ineos Grenadiers had set up.
Yeah, once again, my question is what was their interest? That they had none none as such in the stage itself, except, you know, boost their morale before the Pyrenees coming. We remember last year Thibaut Pinot was flying in the Pyrenees, and is a guy like many riders who needs confidence, like a striker in football. You know,
do you not think that's really significant, though? They'll get on the bus, they'll be high-fiving, and there'll be a togetherness and a sense of belief in Pinot.
Thibaut Pinot will go to bed, you know, full of confidence tonight. He's more boosted, ready to fight for in the Pyrenees, even though, you know, well, we'll get back to it. The stages, the Pyrenees stages, don't look that hard on paper. But I mean, it's always the same. You know, they don't look hard on paper, and then it depends what the riders do. But yeah,
quite a lot of downhill on those stages.
I was going to say, who will go to bed tonight feeling better about themselves? Thibaut Pinot, having survived the crosswinds, finished in the first echelon, or Lionel Burney, having put in a 35-kilometre-an-hour ride.
Wonderful stuff. Back to the Tour de France. Francois, you spoke to one of Pinot's teammates. Yeah. I mean, when it's splitting in the crosswinds, who better to have with you in of the course. Same colour jersey than Stephen Kung, an excellent time trialist and a really strong rouleur. And I think you spoke to him in the mix zone.
Absolutely.
Stefan. Last year, Thibaut and all the team had a little problem in Echelon in Albi. This year, not only didn't you have a problem, but you were one of the main forces in the Echelon today.
Yeah, I think it was really important for us to show as a team that we were ready, that we learned from our mistakes. I mean, it's one of these battles you have to fight in the Tour and you can only lose. And so today was really good to be there, to show that we're there as a whole team, and it will give us confidence for the rest of the Tour.
Well, less obviously than Groupama FDJ, EF Pro Cycling had a good day as well today. This time last year, or kind of the equivalent day, not the same stage of the race quite, but one of these sort of, you know, lurking, floating, ambush-type days where you set out thinking it might be quite straightforward and then it turns out to be anything but. They weren't... Do you remember last year? They were trying to capitalise and make hay in the crosswinds. They were driving, and then before they knew it,
well, they went a little bit too early, didn't they? They were well organised, and then went the wrong way around the boat.
That's right.
And lost out completely.
They put all the effort in before the wind started blowing properly, blew themselves out, and then when the pace went on, they were in difficulty, and Aran lost. He lost a high position as a result of that. This year, they were much, much quieter. And one of our diarists is Tom Southam, the EF Pro Cycling sports director. And we asked him for his reaction to today's stage.
Yeah, a good day for us today in the crosswinds, which is pretty much sort of 12 months on from us being on the wrong side of kind of what happened today to Pogacar and Landa and co. So we know exactly how it feels. You have to take these things as best you can. Today we got it right. I think the stage last year we obviously got it wrong, but that was playing. Maybe it was playing on the minds of us as sports directors, but we certainly didn't dwell on that before the stage this morning. I think it was Castro where it finished. And we lost, I think, basically the same amount of time as Pogacar and Landa lost today. So something definitely that was in the back of our minds. Today was actually a much harder stage than that one was throughout the day. And we saw a pretty different race, a hard race. Our guys did really well. They were super focused. There are guys on the bus who had the memory of what that felt like last year, and I think they were as determined as we were in the cars that wouldn't happen again. That being said, you know, you don't want to get too excited because it's there's still plenty more traps ahead in this particular race. once we head up to the north. So yeah, a good day, but take them day by day.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed.
Here we go. Here we go. Something about a pudding-flavoured gel for me, for my descending rides.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. And if you want to get 25% off all your Science in Sport products, go to scienceofsport.com. and enter the code SISCP25. They recently launched an indoor cycling range, Turbo Plus, with menthol to help cool you down. Not sure if they've thought about launching a downhill cycling range. I'm not sure what that would feature.
I'm a willing guinea pig if they do.
Sausages.
Funnily enough, we had Tom Carey of The Telegraph and I both had the Aligo with sausage last night. The Aligo was nice, quite good. A very, very cheesy mashed potato, really
probably
gooey
added,
and stretchy.
A little bit of gravity to your...
It possibly right. did, yeah, yeah. I was a little bit disappointed with the sausage. Really? I would. It was with the kind of green herbs in it. Mm-hmm. It didn't have the kind of real meaty tang of the traditional sausage that you would have with Aligo.
Well, they're trying to slowly, you know, get vegan. You know,
right.
Transitioning to vegan.
Vegan
sausage.
Aligo. Anyway, a couple of things on because I said that Pino and Uran came off differently in the crosswinds last year. They didn't. They both lost 1:40. And, you know, that was a difference of a couple of places on the GC for Uran. You know, he would have been fifth and looking up to fourth had it not been for that. So these things can be costly. But as I say, have a little bit more faith in Pogacar and even Landa to recover those losses and go on the offensive a bit more as a result of their losses.
I also mentioned the stage that climbed out of Andorra. Peter Sagan was in that move, but it was Michael Matthews, the one on stage. We're talking about the 2016 Tour de France. Michael Matthews won, Peter Sagan was second, and Edvald Boasenhagen was third.
I think the stage Francois was referring to finished just down the road here in Albi in 2013 that Sagan won. But moving on,
shall we hear from a couple of our audio diarists? Whose teams both had significant roles today. First of all, Lucas Postelberger, whose Bora Hansgrohe team obviously, you know, set the tone for the day, really, by going all out on the offensive early on. And Ryan Gibbons, whose NTT Pro Cycling, Edvald Boasenhagen, went pretty close to winning the stage. He was second in the end. He's good on stages like today, and he's good when the group has been thinned out a little bit and some of the pure sprinters have gone. So he went pretty close today. So let's hear first from Lucas Postelberger and then from Ryan Gibbons.
Hello, guys. Yeah, seventh stage is done. We took on the race today and made it our race. Unfortunately, Peter had a mechanical problem in the sprint, so he missed some points. But nevertheless, it was a tremendous team performance. I wasn't there in the end, but yeah, the beginning was too hard for what I invested yesterday. And yeah, for me, I pushed too much probably, so I couldn't hang on anymore. But the guys rode brilliant and the plan was, yeah, kind of crazy, but with the legs we had, or the guys had, it worked out perfect. So this makes a good feeling for the upcoming two mountain stages, and bring on the next one.
Stage 7 today for the Tour de France. Very, very exciting stage for the viewers, no doubt. Absolutely exploded from the get-go. First climb of the day, Bora really ripping it up. I think it was in four pieces at one point. And then just was absolutely flat out till the end. We as NTT, very, very excited and grateful to get Eddie Boasenhagen up there in second place, really close to getting the victory, but Vautrin was just too strong. personally on the first climb. Obviously you never know what's going to happen in a day like this. So I waited back with our sprinter in hope that it was potentially going to come back. Sunweb had the same idea, as did Lotto. But unfortunately, that was not to be. But nonetheless, we're quite happy that we got a result out. I think, again, after maybe 2 days of it being a little bit stale and stagnant for viewers, a great day of excitement. Kudos to Bora for ripping it up. And unfortunately, Sagan having his issue in the sprint, but still getting the green jersey for their efforts. But I hope they do suffer for it tomorrow. And I've got no doubt that this weekend is going to be very, very interesting and tough at the same time.
Two of our audio diarists there, Ryan Gibbons, and before that, Lucas Postelberger. And the latest update from our audio diarist you can hear in today's episode of Kilometer Zero, supported by Zwift. It's fantastic. I mean, we haven't heard much from Connor Swift yet in the episodes, but he's been sending us in loads of great audio, and we really played a lot of that in today's episode of Kilometer Zero. And a very interesting guy, with a really interesting role in this tour to help Nairo Quintana, and I think he did a really good job today of supporting Quintana. And again, as you say, Francois, one of the guys we're not really talking about. And if you look at the race and the GC on the eve of the Pyrenees, we kind of look at Pino and think he's still dusting himself down a little bit from misfortune. But if he's okay physically, time-wise, he's only 13 seconds down overall. All of those riders in the top 10 are really, really close to the yellow jersey.
Well, everyone's quite close to the yellow jersey. The top 20 are all within 2 minutes, and then you've got Carapaz at 2 minutes and 2 seconds in 21st place. I mean, even though, Richie Port and Bauke Mollema lost time, they're not out of the hunt for sort of the, if people fall by the wayside, consistency could still haul them back up another half dozen or 10 places. It's just the quirk of the overall at the moment, how the Colombians are all in even numbered places. Egan Bernal in fourth, Quintana in sixth, Lopez in eighth, and Urán in 10th. There's a real kind of national battle going on between those four Colombians. And
Iguita in 15th.
Oh, he's ruining it. Rubbish. Come on, Iguita, move up to 14th tomorrow.
Sorry, Lionel. Oh.
Dear. And the French, I mean, we've talked a bit about Guillaume Martin.
Guillaume Martin. I mean, there was, a sign of the new Guillaume Martin today. He launched a sprint. On the finish line, the guy who tried to attack first before, of course, the real sprinters made their move was Guillaume Martin. What was he trying to do? I mean, this guy.
Well, he launched a sprint and finished 20th. So
the fact that he tried to almost 900 meters from the line to surge and try something is a great show of if not strength, at least of confidence.
But
and it was
Francois.
Interesting.
I think you've got a bit of a soft spot for Romain Bardet at this Tour de France.
I never had a soft spot for Romain Bardet. I like the guy. He's clever. He's trying to find the best way with his abilities to become the rider he has to become. But the way we haven't talked about Romain Bardet at all during this Tour de France is pretty promising. Once again, tomorrow and the day after, even more so on Sunday, because I'm afraid tomorrow might be. It's funny, this first week at a very promising program, you're going to the theater and my gosh, the first act looked great, second act was brilliant, and nothing is really happening, tension is building up. No, I'm not saying nothing happened at all, but you can tell that. The main favorites, they've been trying to hold their position, but they've been holding back. I mean, we had the impression that Jumbo-Visma has been holding back quite a lot, and they won three stages. How great can you be by holding back and winning three stages? But others really seem to me to be waiting for, however different you try to make the course of Tour de France, like they've been trying this year to, the mountains on the second day, the Turini, and all these climbs you never see on the Tour, and then Montaigual, and then even Orsières-Merlet on the fourth day. They don't if you look at the list of the favourites at the start of the Tour and the GC right now, nobody's totally out of it, you know. So there's been some holding back. Will we see, you know, the first real action, the first real difference and time gaps in the Pyrenees? It's a big question. I don't have the answer to this. My impression is that before we kind of get the transfer to L'Île de Ré and Oléron, and then a real second act of the Tour de France starts.
The first big test of the tour could be the COVID tests on the rest day.
Wow.
Sorry to drag it back to that, but I mean,
Before that, the Pyrenees, they are both Etap Lionel Burney, aren't they? Because they finish with descents into the finish. just do
bully
the joke
yourself.
That's
right. And even tomorrow. I mean, Persourde has never been the hardest climb.
It's a lovely climb, but it's not the hardest climb.
But it's steady, consistent. Mm. Every rider knows Persourde by like the palm of his hand. So or the back of his saddle. I can't see this stage tomorrow making a difference. But there's a nice
balance to this week, I think. I mean, everyone was really down on the tour, it felt, after the go slow day. And I think that is an inevitable consequence of having two proper summity finishes in the first week. And then today, they absolutely raced.
Was that the go slow day where they averaged 42 kilometres an hour?
Quite. Absolutely. Well, we talked about that, didn't we? About how it might not have been entertaining.
Downhill, I don't know.
Oh God!
Yeah, but once again, when I'm saying holding back, I'm not saying that, you know, they're not trying. It's not hard, and you know, obviously every day on the Tour de France is hard stuff. But if Roglic had decided to attack from the foot of Orcia Merlet, he might have won the tour already.
But isn't the best tour the better tours are the ones who offer up the clues gently and kind of almost seductively, rather than kind of reveal everything on the first big mountain stage. I mean, I personally enjoy the general reveal of who's the best.
Yeah, so credits to Thierry Gouvenou and Christian Prudhomme
Well, Prudhomme just walked past us, didn't he?
Oh, really? I didn't see him.
Yeah, he walked past us. Well, you saw Bernard Thévenet. But Prudhomme was just in front of him.
Yeah, but Bernard Thévenet never won in Lavore, you know?
No, it's hard to... You better check that, Francois. Listen, while we're speaking, we've just had another audio diary in from Michael Morkov. Shall we hear from him? Because his man, Sam Bennett, you know, he was in the green jersey today and lost the green jersey on a tough day. So let's hear what Michael Morkov made of today's stage.
Today could have been a nice and easy sprinter stage, but it turned out to be a very hard stage. Hopefully the stage where... I don't hope we get any other stages where we'll be dropped so early. I had to let go already after 8Ks together with the most sprinters. We was like 50 guys dropped at that point due to the high tempo of Bora Hansgrohe, who really took control of today's stage and made a big acceleration and attack straight from the start of the stage, which was a good move from them, and I guess spectacular to watch on television, but not so spectacular to be a part of. So unfortunately, I was a bit behind. Sam also didn't make it in the first group, so we lost out on the stage that we thought we could play for the victory. But at least we had Julian in the first group. He also was sprinting for first and missed out, but he showed again that he's in great shape. And we just have to look forward and wait for another opportunity. I'm sure it will come, and there's plenty of stages, but it's always a pity when you get your ass kicked.
Well, it's always a pity when you get your arse kicked, isn't it? I think we can all relate to that, Lionel.
I mean, if the stage had all been downhill, I reckon they'd have been fine. But it wasn't, was it?
It wasn't, no. They don't have the luxury of picking their choosing which stages they ride.
Well, quite.
But no, listen, a note of appreciation for our audio diarists who are very, you know, they've committed to sending in stuff every day, and not all of it is making it into the episodes, but we will gather it all together and release it as a friend special at the end, where we'll be able to follow their Tour de France from start to end, which could be really interesting. And big thanks to all of our audio diarists for keeping us abreast of what's happening inside the race. We really appreciate it.
If I was Sam Bennett tonight, I wouldn't be too disheartened, because the race for the green jersey is not going to be decided today. Tomorrow, the intermediate...
If you're Sam Bennett, you want a stage win, don't you?
Absolutely. But there's opportunities. I mean, there's...
And I think that would be more meaningful than the green jersey.
Of course. I don't think, you know, he said it at the start of the tour, and I think he was not... I mean, Sam Bennett's not the kind of guy, you know, who pisses you off, or who, he's not a fake news guy. And when he says he's going for stage wins, it's obviously the green jersey was not his priority. He was happy to take it, but let's face it, with Sagan's ability to go in the first... Tomorrow, Sagan
will be in the break, won't he?
He'll be in the break, yeah. As usual. You know, he'll be in a break on Sunday, and Sam Bennett will never be in the break. I mean... we're on, you know, we're not on equal terms there. So I don't think it's a big disappointment for
Sam Bennett. Exactly. I mean, the two big opportunities for Sam Bennett come after the rest day. The stage at Ile de Ré is absolutely billiard table flat. The wind could blow, of course, but he's not going to... It's very unlikely to get caught out on a day like that, I would say.
Billiard table flat. Is that the sort... Do you like... Is that a bit too hilly for you?
And the stage to Poitiers has got a few lumps in it, but will be a sprint and won't be too hard. I'm not rising to it now.
Poitiers for me is Sam Bennett's win. Yeah, it's
and
the day.
Poitiers. What happened in Poitiers?
Well, in Poitiers was where Sean Kelly won his first Tour de France stage in his first tour in 1978.
You tell a great story about that, Lionel.
Yeah, I do. Well, I don't. Sean does in his book, which I had a hand in. Yes, I'd love to remember that story.
Well, we'll remember it before we get to Poitiers.
Yeah, we will. We'll look it up.
Sprint in Poitiers because it could be, you know, Ireland could feature very well.
enough. I think that's it. I think that's it for this episode.
We're going to finish.
I'm going to put the mic down now.
Let's describe where we are, because we had a beautiful setting last night for the podcast, and we were by the river in a lovely little town, difficult town to pronounce.
Meruès.
Tonight, we are in another beautiful place, aren't we? Staying in a lovely hotel just around the corner, and we seem to be in the heart of the sort of tour bubble. A lot of Tour de France people here. And you find us a nice restaurant, Francois, by the looks of things. I'm confident.
I think it's great. It's called Le Vieux Marché, the old market. And I think I'll be going for the, raw tuna with crisp vegetables. Yes, you know, in France, from time to time, we don't overcook vegetables.
Wow, I haven't encountered
that. It happens,
you
know. But then we warn, you know, the clients, and we say, it's going to be crisp vegetables, so, you know.
That's promising.
There you are.
And what wine are we going to drink with that, Francois?
I think we're near Gaillac, and Gaillac is a great place for wines. I mean, they have good... It used to be pretty average wines like 40 years ago, and then, you know, the quality went up like most wines in France went from quantity to quality. And Gaillac are doing great reds, great roses, and great whites. And I think, you know, given you could have red with tuna. I mean, I'm not like, you know, I'm not like some guys would say, oh, don't have red with fish. You know, some guys we know are kind of strict, but you do have, actually, when it comes to food, you do what you want, you know, and what's good for you.
You introduced us last year to a lot of chilled red wine. Yeah, we stayed in Gaillac last year.
We did. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. No, I'll go for a Gaillac rosé personally, and with tuna. I think that's probably the best mixture. I mean, the best balance, because whites with tuna. No, I'm not, tuna is too strong. It's like red meat, so you have to go for something a little bit stronger.
But you don't want to overpower the fish.
Absolutely.
You know, with a,
so, no, rosé should be fine.
A nice rosé sounds great. Excellent. Well, it was a great stage today, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, I've really enjoyed the opening week. I mean, we're coming to the end of the opening week. The first...
There's been a lot
mountain
of variety,
stages. Yeah, I there think. Has. I think it's been a good slow burner so far. My only question is whether Katusha, who make the cycling podcast jersey, which felt very aero on the descent today.
You were wearing that. You were sporting that today, Lionel.
Whether they can make me a pudding-coloured jersey to mark my descending prowess.
What's your descending skills today?
What's the colour of pudding?
Just one question on your right today. Did you actually pedal at all?
Yes, of course I did. I think it should be a sort of pudding colour, a kind of a beige, maybe with some polka dot currants on it. You know, like a real heavy British steamed pudding.
The pudding jersey for the best descender. It's not a bad idea.
It's a great idea.
If we see Christian Prudhomme again tonight, let's suggest it.
What would that be in French, Francois, the pudding jersey?
Well, same thing, you know, because you've got black pudding that's boudin.
Boudin.
But you have boudin blanc, which is quite a... And boudin has kind of a shape that would go down well in this sense. It's kind of aerodynamics of black pudding. could be interesting.
Into the Pyrenees tomorrow, chaps.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll be back tomorrow night.
We will be back tomorrow night, and we'll be in Luchon tomorrow night, won't we? One of our favourite places. So, looking forward to that. In the meantime, thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
And well done on your ride today again. And thank you, Francois.
Merci beaucoup.